What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I did. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum as well as mints. It's got some nootropics in it. So basically supplements that make your brain work better. It's got L-theanine, caffeine, and vitamins B12 and B6 and B12. It helps with memory and focus. So, you know, I'll chew some whenever I'm making some phone calls, whenever I'm doing anything for work, and I'm feeling like I'm mentally dragging a little bit. Pop a piece of NeuroGum and it gets me to where I need to be. I also chew it, you know, while I'm working out or while I'm training jiu-jitsu. Really just anytime I feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I pop a piece of NeuroGum and it gets me to where I need to be. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
And shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. So if you guy with a beard and you're trying to figure out what to use to take care of it, check out Captain Beard Co. They have unbelievable beard oils, butters, and balms. Anything you can do to help keep a healthy beard. They're actually also, they've got amazing smelling body wash, and they just brought out shampoo and conditioner. All stuff that smells amazing. And the great thing about it is they use all natural organic ingredients. Later this week, you'll see our episode with Gabe where he talks about the different stuff that they use and why they use it. But it's a great product. It smells amazing. I mean, I haven't needed to wear cologne or anything because of it because it smells so good. They even got candles. So if you're looking for anything that's going to take for men, grooming, beard, hair, anything like that, check out Captain Beard Co. Use our promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchases. Great local company here in St. Louis, and Gabe's an awesome dude.
Oh, dude, he's such a good dude. I always love sitting down and talking with him. So we have that episode and we just released, you know, earlier, or well, we released that one on Thursday. Okay. Yeah, so that one will come out. This will come out first.
This comes out Monday.
Yeah. So yeah, he's so good. He's just a great dude. Such a great outlook on things, and I just enjoy sitting down and talking to him every time. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man. How things been going for you?
Good. Just finally getting settled into the apartment. Yeah, just finally get back into a routine. I feel like I've been working, but I feel like I'm finally able to like work, mm-hmm. like do what I need to do day in and day out. Yeah, it's been great. You know, the place is great. I mean, it's the house obviously, but sure. Yeah, no, this place is awesome. Gym's right down the hall, pool one level up. The boys love it. It's heated. So they get to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Before it gets too cold. Yeah. So
no, it's crazy. You guys were swimming the other day.
Yeah.
Awesome. I mean, even going up there now, it probably feels like a hot tub considering it's like 40 degrees out now.
Oh, so. Yeah. So yeah. How about you?
Yeah, things are good. I got my big match in a couple days. So by the time this comes out, you know, that'll be gone and done. And hopefully I'm telling everybody that I won. So really looking forward to that this weekend. I've been training really hard for like the last 2 months. But, you know, I've been getting ready for this one specifically the last 4 weeks. I feel like I've definitely leveled up my jiu-jitsu game for sure.
That's
I feel
awesome.
Like this is like one of those times where I'm working on something that's a little different than I guess I can talk about it. Now, since this is going to come out afterwards, yeah, I can talk about my game plan. Yeah, so my whole game plan with him, and I'm hoping I'm able to implement this, is I'm going to pull guard on him and try to leg lock him. That's not something that most MMA guys are very privy to. It's like the leg lock game, and that's a very like pretty jiu-jitsu specific thing, because you know, if you think about MMA, where if someone can punch you, you know, it's definitely not a very safe position for me to be in. If I'm hanging on to someone's foot, this guy's, you know, able to punch me in the face, I'm probably not going to be doing that in MMA. But the fact that it's just grappling definitely is something that's super, super common. So I'm going to be pulling guard on him, which basically means I'm going to be willing to be the guy on bottom and fall. Basically, I'm going to try to pull guard right into a submission is my goal. Would be to pull guard, fall underneath him, knock him over, and leg lock him immediately. So that's something I've been training and working a lot, pulling into the butterfly ashi position and sweeping him with that, and then just going right for a straight ankle lock. That's the only kind of, we're only allowed, so Adam said the rule set for us is what it would be at IBJJF at Purple Belt, which IBJJF is a lot more conservative with their submissions that they allow. So they only allow like any, so there's like the, and the reason for this, it makes sense, makes complete sense, is there's the thing about leg locks that, that scare everybody is because you have a very, very small window to tap your, the, cause like the difference between you getting put in an arm bar or a shoulder lock or something like that, you have, you feel like the stretching of things long before the pops happen. You feel it getting really tight and uncomfortable and like that, the stretching of the muscles and the tendons long before like things typically pop and snap. With the legs, it's like the second you feel pain, it's too late. So, you know, and that's when things start popping. So
you've got a fine line to walk because obviously you're not wanting to end or hurt this guy's career in the UFC.
Exactly. So the only one we're allowed is the straight ankle lock, which essentially is like you're, you know, bending the foot backwards versus like all the other ones where you're kind of twisting the foot more, where those pops happen a lot faster. So, so yeah, that's a submission that I've been working on, and that's definitely not my, I've never gone in with the intention of pulling guard ever. Like I normally, my mentality is always like I wrestler in high school. I think I'm a halfway decent wrestler and my ability to take people down is usually pretty good. But, you know, with this guy, I've heard that he, you know, from the people that have trained with him, and I've known several people that have trained with him, say he's very hard to take down. He's got really good, like, single leg, double leg defense. And so I'm like, well, if he's hard to, and that's like my bread and butter takedowns, a sweep single to the outside. And so I'm like, all right, well, if that's like something he's already really good at, if I know he's really good at defending that, like maybe like I'm going to try to do something that he's definitely not used to. And that's somebody pulling guard on him. So that's
before, for the people that are watching that may not know it, what's pulling guard mean?
So it's willing, like I'm basically falling, I'm falling to my butt willingly. Like I'm, you know, a lot of times you'll watch these jiu-jitsu matches, like where guys will just immediately sit down. Mm-hmm. Like that's technically pulling guard. So that's a way to do it. The way I'm intending to do it is I'm going to make it look like I want to wrestle with him, but I'm going to like surprise him and fall underneath him. And hopefully I can fall right into a submission. And that's what I've been drilling, and it's been working really, really well for me. I was able to, you know, I've been submitting a lot of guys in the gym with that lately. So I'm feeling really good about that. And that's my intention. So I'm hoping that by the time this comes out, I'm hopefully like I'm predicting the future, but we'll see. I'm pumped. I'm pumped for this match. It's been a long time coming. I've been looking forward to it for a number of weeks now, and I'm just fired up, and a lot of people are going to be there. So I just don't, whatever happens, I want to put on a good performance and be proud of the performance that I put on. So, yeah.
That's awesome, man. I'm super excited. And it's the atmosphere, just everything about it.
It's cool.
They do a great job with it. And yeah, I'm just excited to see you compete.
Yeah, dude, it's going to be fun, man. It's such a cool, cool little venue. You know, it's like when Adam was on here, we talked about it. It's small. It's like a, you know, kind of like a bar fight scene or fight club feel, kind of like dark and
underground fight club.
Yeah. You know,
it's pretty sweet.
It's cool.
You want us to make signs for you?
Go Zach. Yeah. Get big cutouts of my face. Yep. Yeah. So that's this weekend. So
has your kit come in yet?
What?
Your kit?
No. Adam was supposed to be here today, obviously, but he had, he couldn't make it. So, but he said it was coming in today. So I'm excited. We've got a Zach and Pat show, Rash Garden Shorts, my Zach and Pat show. And then I got my real estate company on the back. I got a Watson logo put on there too. So it'll be, it'll be sweet. I'm pumped.
It's awesome.
And just have that kit just to wear at the gym. It'll be cool.
Yeah, that'll be
first
cool.
Piece of Zach and Pat apparel. about damn time. You know, we need to get on that actually.
Yeah, I
found a good company. Let's chat after the show about that. But yeah, we wanted to, it's one of our favorite, kinds of episodes we were going to do today is a Q&A episode. We actually got quite a few questions from people, so we really appreciate it whenever you guys do send them in. You know, we throw question boxes up on our Instagram and then people shoot us over some questions. So is there any one you wanted to start with specifically?
No,
I guess I could have sent you some of these,
that's all right. Go ahead, you've got the majority of them, so go
well let it. Me let me just start with this one. But Nick said, why didn't you razor that noggin? And you know, I got a little bit of a haircut here, as people are probably noticing, but I haven't gone this short in a long time.
You just don't want people to get you and Sean confused.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I was like, you know, I got this thing this weekend. I was like, I wanted to kind of just feel badass. And I was like, all right, well, let me, and I haven't had a, and I was like, let's kind of try to remember what I look like. Cause I used to shave my head like this all the time back when I played football. And, you know, I guess every every we used to do football for football. We used to do what was called Team Week, mm-hmm. which was really cool. We, you know, at the time, I don't think any other high schools did this, and I thought it was really cool. We did basically, you know, there's that first week of football practice of the year where everybody does 2-a-days. Well, we did a we did a team week where we did 3-a-days, and we lived at the school for the whole week, or for 5 days straight or 6 days straight, where we would basically practice 3 times a day. The third practice was like pretty much just like a walkthrough kind of thing, but it was cool because you spent the whole week with your whole team, and like it was just like a great bonding thing. You know, we have set up.
Remember the Titans?
Yeah, it was cool. Like, you know, we all had air mattresses set up in the bat. We had batting cages in our gym, and like, you know, we just batting cages. Not baseball's not playing that time of year, so we just like all of our set up all our air mattresses and shit in the batting cages, and those are just like some of my favorite memories of high school were. You know,
right. And back then you guys didn't really have cell phones or anything like that.
Yeah. Guys had some, but it wasn't like you weren't supposed to be on them. And it was just fun because you're just like with your boys all week. You're fucking exhausted because you're doing all these practices. People get like delirious and like just slap happy and funny. And another thing that I guess kind of gets me into the point where I was saying is we'd always shave like our heads like super funny. Like we'd like just walk around with these like crazy haircuts, like people with like mohawks and like.
What was the craziest one you did?
I mean, you would just give people like patch jobs, like just take chunks out of their hair and you just look like a moron, you know, like the reverse mohawk where you just got the one down the middle. Like people, I don't even remember what some of mine were, but like, I think, you know, some people would do the old man, like cul-de-sac, you know, people would, you know, and it was like, you didn't have to do it, but everybody did it kind of thing. And there was always like 2 or 3 guys that didn't do it. And, you know, but at the end of the week, everybody shaves everything off. So like the whole football team for like the first, you know, when everybody goes back to school is bald. And, it was just really cool, but yeah, I haven't had a shaved head since then. And, I just felt like, I wanted to feel badass. I wanted to just something different. And then like, man, I kind of want to remember what I look like bald because I'm losing my hair. So soon enough, I'm just gonna have to fucking just start bicking the motherfucker. But Nick asked why I didn't shave it all off because I was like, I don't want to straight razor it.
You know? Well, that you gotta take in what time you have with it left.
Right, its days are numbered. But yeah, that's why I just switched it up here. So
yeah, I razored it college. Yeah. Yeah, my freshman year I did it, and then in pro ball. Yeah, one of the very first pictures of me in pro ball was with a mohawk and just. Completely shave the sides. Remember Delino DeShields telling me, don't ever use, he's my coach. He's like, don't ever put shaving cream. Use conditioner.
Oh, yeah.
Or lotion.
Okay.
Because you won't have razor burn by using that. So I was like, all right.
Good enough.
Yeah, no, I would take a razor to it and had a mohawk. But yeah, that was 2011 was the last time I did that. And then part of that was my freshman year of college. So I did it all through high school. I was always had a shaved, well, freshman year, my hair was pretty long. But yeah, so after that, went from having really long hair my freshman year, people thought I was a stoner. And then shaved it all off and rocked a buzzed head rest of high school.
Yeah, it's just a look. I like it. If it's like nice because it's like no maintenance. I wake up and I look the exact same as I do when I like I'm just fresh out of the shower.
Right. You know? That's why I wear a hat most of the time.
Yeah, 100%. Me too. 100% because I just don't want to. I don't want to just care what my hair looks like,
right?
You know, especially with like how my hair looks these days, I'm not like super pumped about it. but anyway, let's get into the next one. Ooh, this is a good one.
Yeah.
From Dr. Brett Lux, he goes, "Who is better looking, Zach or Pat?" I expect an aggressive exchange. No, I definitely think Pat's a better looking guy than me for sure. He's got a lot going for you. He's like a lot taller. I mean, I would say we're both attractive. We both have like.
I was gonna say you got the blue. Aww. You got the blue eyes. Aww, you know, like, yeah.
I was gonna say he's got the tall, dark, and handsome. He's got it all. So I was like, I don't have any of that.
You got the muscles. You're built, and you got the blue eyes. Got a great smile.
Oh, well, thanks, man. It's crooked, but I got one.
Hey, so is mine. Bottom teeth.
Yeah.
Great thing. Nobody sees the bottom teeth. Yeah, no one sees those. So.
Yeah.
No, that's funny. Yeah, thanks,
like,
Brett.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. He's like, I would expect a heated exchange. No, we're just going to compliment each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. okay. Remington asked, what are both of your favorite submissions and positions in BJJ? I know you didn't really get into much.
Get that far, yeah. I mean, it was a couple months, and then hockey starting up. I mean, that's always my first love, sports-wise, from when I was playing. So, unfortunately, I took a step back from jiu-jitsu because of hockey. So didn't quite really, while I was there, it was great because I enjoyed it. Was learning a lot of defensive techniques. So didn't really get into too many submissions. I'll tell you, kind of flip it, submissions I wanted to learn because I am good on my feet and I feel like I am tough to take down. I wanted to learn how to do some like standing submissions.
Oh, yeah. There's not a lot of standing.
Right. I know we had talked about it before, but like, getting it to where you're in control of the gi and then you're like choking a guy out with his gi while standing up. You know, that would have been fun to learn. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of if there was anything that we practiced when I was.
You learned North South Kimura in my class.
Yep. That was the one that I learned.
Yeah. I was going to say that's one of one. I have two answers. I have two that I would say are like my most common ones that I probably get. My favorite position for sure would be rear mount. If I can get on someone's back, that's because I the reason I love that position versus like any other ones, like especially like when I'm going against guys that are much bigger than me, being, you know, one of the, not like the smallest guy in the gym, but I'm like usually kind of like right in the middle, but like, it's pretty rare that I'm going with guys lighter than me. But that's why I like rear mount is like, cause when I, even with bigger guys, like if Pat and I were to roll and I would meet, like, that's like going to be that's my thought. Anytime I'm rolling with someone bigger than me, I was like, all right, if I get on their back, like that's where I think my submissions are strongest. Like, I think I'm really good at trapping people's arms up and then, you know, attacking the neck. But other than that, I would say the North-South Kimura and then pairing that with the side triangle, which is like where you're in that North-South Kimura position and you can step over the head and you can have the Kimura on one side and then you have their other arm and their head trapped in between your legs. So, and you've got like a plethora of like six different submissions from there. And so like if once you get somebody in that position, you can like really, really hold them. Like, for example, I was there a couple weeks ago with, you know, a very, very strong guy at the gym. Watching this dude, he's a personal trainer, and watching him throw weight around is disgusting. Like, just, I mean, deadlifting 500 pounds for reps. But I was able to hold him down in this side triangle position and this Kimura, and like, you can just kind of bounce from different submissions. Just
was that
threatening.
Low T?
Like, what?
Was that low T?
No, not low T. Not our buddy low T. No, I bet this guy is very high T if I had to guess. but anyway, yeah, once you're there, you can kind of bounce around to all the submissions and eventually one of them opens up. Like, you've got a shoulder lock, you've got a triangle, you've got a wrist lock, you've got a Kimura, and you've got a bunch of different stuff that you can go to. So it's so versatile. And that was something we worked on probably about a year ago in the advanced class. And it's like something I still go back to all the time. And then there's a Trico Plata there. There's all sorts of great positions or great submissions from that position. So,
I can tell you which way I don't like being submitted.
What's that?
When someone puts their fucking knee right in my sternum.
Yeah.
Or like, and you can't breathe.
Oh, the knee on belly.
Yeah. That, like, it's not really a submission.
No.
But no. That, I mean, I've been submitted way more times than I actually had a chance to put somebody in a submission. But the one that got me the tap quickest, because I just couldn't fucking breathe, but this guy was also 300 pounds.
Yeah.
He put his knee right into my belly, like right into the sternum. And I was like,
yeah, he's a big boy. Yeah.
Get off.
Yeah. Just get off me. Yeah. Just cracking your ribs.
Oh, gosh.
Big old boy.
Fucking massive. And it just, that hurt. Just the, it hurt. And then not being able to breathe on top of it sucked.
Yeah.
That was awful.
For sure. No, so that's that's a good one. Ooh. All right. Here's a good, another, we got a lot of jiu-jitsu related questions. So I'm going to bounce from jiu-jitsu to other things. Knowing what you know now with fitness and nutrition, if you had to start over, what would you do? This is a great question. This is from our CrossFit coach, Rachel. And former guest, I would pay, like, I mean, I've been working out for 15 years-ish, you know, really started like lifting weights seriously when I became like a freshman in high school. And man, for probably the first 10 years of working out, I never tracked any of my food. Mm-hmm. Like, so that would be something that I would, you know, cause I thought I was eating enough protein, or I thought I was, oh, I'm eating good. You know, I eat clean or whatever. I know that if I went back and actually tracked the amount of like macros I was eating. I probably wasn't eating enough. I probably wasn't eating enough protein. So yeah, I would, if I could change anything, I would go back and start tracking my food sooner, because I think that the diet is, you can't out train a bad diet.
No,
you can't. Like, you have to have your diet in aligned with your goals for sure. Like right now, Bree's been giving me, like, adding food to my nutrition, because I was losing weight, you know, with how much I'm training right now. And like, so she bumped me up. I'm like sitting right around 3,000 calories right now.
Oh, wow.
So I'm eating a fucking shitload.
That is a lot.
You know, I've been doing that for like 2 or 3 weeks now, and I've gained like 4 pounds. But even, you know, when I did the in-body yesterday, I was like pretty happy with my thing. Right. So, yeah, so that's, I would track my food sooner. And I was very averse to doing, like, not averse, but like, I just didn't do a lot of like cardio related stuff until like the last, really until I got into jiu-jitsu, when I kind of got into like the CrossFit around the same time. Just cause like there's a lot of people that kind of overlap there, but I got way more into like cardio and understanding like your gas tank and stuff like that. Obviously that kind of came with jiu-jitsu too, but yeah, there would be two things. I would have probably implemented more cardio and definitely track my food sooner. What about you?
Tracking food. Absolutely. I mean, first, I would have started at a younger age,
yeah,
just in general with working out, training, nutrition, everything. But ultimately, nutrition. I mean, it's what fuels our body, makes us be able to perform at our peak. I mean, yeah, you can do all the strength training and all that, but if you're not getting the nutrients that you need, that shit doesn't matter. You're not going to be able to develop and progress with strength if you don't have the nutrition behind it. And, you know, that's one of the things. I was like, in college, we never really had, like, we had Cardinals nutritionists come in and basically was like, oh, soda's bad. Yadier Molina went from drinking 13, 20, 32 ounce sodas a day to two, and he lost all this weight. Like, oh, that's the answer. Just cut out soda.
Just cut out soda.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, so
a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. And so I would have gotten with a nutritionist a long time ago. And, because you're right. You're like, oh, I'm eating clean. I feel like I'm doing well. But at the same time, you're really not, unless you're tracking it. So, yeah, getting with a nutritionist and tracking. And the great thing about it, too, is, like, you know, you get into a habit of it and it works out great. And I mean, I can speak for myself. Like, the last 6 weeks, I've been prepping the house and cleaning the house and getting it ready to sell, selling the house, moving, all of that stuff. And so, like, I was staying on top of what I was eating, but this is a perfect example, but I wasn't hitting my macros. I wasn't getting to where I needed to be. And I've actually I was under eating, and I was actually I put on weight because I was under eating. And instead of sticking it's crazy how that works. So like, instead of sticking to my macros, but the great thing about it is like, now that everything's all said and done and I can get back into a routine, I don't have to start from scratch. I already know what I need to do, and because I've done it, and I can just jump right back into it. And I know that by doing that, that the, you know, 3 or 4 pounds that I put on over those 6 weeks, which is crazy, because in the past I could have easily put 10 or 15 pounds right back on by doing that. But, you know, because I've got that base, and it's easy to go back to now that I've got it there and I've done it. It's easy to get back to. And I just wish that's something that I would have started a long, long time ago. It's just not talked about nearly as much. Everybody's like, oh, get in the weight room, get stronger, get bigger. But no one talks about the most important aspect of that is fueling your body to get to that.
Well, and I think a part of it for me is, like, you know, I've been kind of consistently tracking. I've been inconsistently tracking my macros for probably since like 2016. And, you know, I go through these phases where I would do it for, you know, a couple months, then I fall off, and then I'm like, oh, yeah. But one thing it really has taught me is once you understand like macronutrients and like understanding what the macros actually like are, like understanding like, okay, that's a carb rich food. That's a fat rich food. This is a protein rich food. This is fat and protein, and like kind of understanding how in kind of like what each one of those is for. Like, you know, kind of, at least this is how I always view it, is carbs are like, if carbs and fats are your fuel sources, and, you know, protein is like your kind of like building block, you know, for like building muscle is how I always viewed it. And then like, but the difference between carbs and fats are, you know, carbs are going to be your quick energy, like the food that I always say, like, if you're building a fire, that's like the lighter fluid, the gasoline, the shit that burns really, really fast, and the shit that's going to burn first. And like your fats would be like the big fat logs, like the ones that are going to burn slow over a longer period of time. And like, kind of once I understood that, and then also you can get into like timing your macros around your workouts, like eating your carbs, like the fast fuel sources, like before your workouts and after your workouts, because you want to replenish that glycogen. And just like having an understanding of how the food works. I think if we would have been taught that if that was something that they would teach in school or something like that, I think people would have a better understanding.
And have a much fitter
society, for yeah. sure.
Well, that's the thing. It's just like, honestly, it really, I mean, I think since COVID with coming out and everybody, dying from multiple comorbidities that, and I don't know, maybe if it's just the people that I follow on social media, but I feel like all I see on social media is talking about healthy foods and healthy eating and all of that. So it's like, I feel like there has been a shift a little bit since then, but I still don't think this is stuff that's being taught in school, but it's stuff that should be taught. For and sure. I wish this is something that I would have learned from a really, really young age and done that all the way through. And
basic nutrition and basic like finance related mm-hmm. stuff, like
absolutely.
On people, like teaching people about their, credit score and, just teaching people of how like interest works and mm-hmm. like all these other things like that, that most people have no idea and like have never been educated on it. And no wonder, we're as fat as the society's ever been. And we're in more debt than we've ever been.
Right.
Like it completely makes sense because we've not been taught these things.
No.
So anyway, enough with that, I suppose.
All right. Here,
what do you got?
Do this one. Where'd it go? There it is. So what are some lessons you've learned in your career that you've taken into parenting?
Oh man. What have I learned from my career taken into parenting? I feel like it's
multitasking.
That's one thing is like being able to do more things. But if you'd ask Gina, I don't multitask very well.
We're guys. We don't do that.
Yeah. We don't really do that very well. But I would say it probably goes the other way around, man.
Right.
Like, I think that's kind of where you're going to go with it too, probably. Mm-hmm. I feel like, parenting has taught me a lot more about my job, about my career. I think that some of the stuff I've learned from being a parent over the last 2.5 years, I've definitely changed so much. Like I have so much more patience. I have so much more, like I'm slower to react the way that I want to react. Mm-hmm. I'd say those are the biggest thing, patience and just being able to communicate a little bit better.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't think there's anything. Like I said, flip it. There's more that I've learned from parenting for my job than my job for parenting. Just because, and for both of those points, but then adding on like the understanding. So like, I really saw a shift realizing like, hey, kind of like with your kids, they don't know they're kids. You got to teach them. Well, same thing. I feel like I'm with work. My clients are just little kids especially first time homebuyers or anybody that hasn't bought in the last, even if you have, because it's so it changes so much that every person I talk to, I'm not going to speak to them like a little kid, but
right.
I need to understand that these people have no clue what they're getting into.
Right. You got to remember this, right. that you do this every day.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's easy for us.
Right. Right. And as a parent, like we're doing things just naturally because we've learned and they're still learning as children to do those things. So teaching them and going through that as a parent and understanding like, hey, they're 4 and 5 years old. That's it. Like they're not older kids. They haven't learned this yet. Same thing with my clients. My clients don't do this every day. They don't fully understand it. They have an idea, but they don't fully understand it. So I need to make sure that the approach that I take with them is fully educating them and teaching them ins and outs of this. So that's probably one of the bigger ones. But again, yeah, patience is huge, but that also goes to the understanding side of it and having that patience for people, helping them understand what it is too. So, but
perfect. Next one, Tony. I am handsome, strong as fuck, and 46. I want to start BJJ. Am I too old? No, Tony, you're not. I've seen people way old. Dude, one of my main training partners who I train with all the time, I believe he is 46 or 47, just got his purple belt last week. He went and competed at the IBJJF, got silver. You know, I train with him all the time, and he's a fucking animal. We're about the same size, and that's what I love about jiu-jitsu, because it just like brings all these people together that you wouldn't normally like he's a theater teacher at Wash U, you know. Never. Like, it's just like very, you know, it's probably not someone I would ever like be like hanging out with all the time, but him and I hang out, you know, we're together 4 days a week. Like, he trains with us on Saturday mornings. He's awesome. And but yeah, he's 46 or 47, and just got his purple belt. And like, there's so many people that, you know, came into my, when I was teaching, you know, because I taught at Watson's for about 2 years. I'm not doing it any at the moment. But I'd have people in the beginner's class come in, and they're, I don't know how old everybody is, but I remember there was specifically this like older guy. There's several guys and they're like 50s and 60s that train at Watson's. And yeah. Like, you know, it, you know, when you're older, you gotta be smarter. You gotta know what, you know, what you're there for. Like, you can't go in with the mentality that at 46, you're just going to like start today and be a world champion in 2 years. Like, that's not going to happen.
Right.
But like, you know, you could go and you could compete at these local tournaments. You could show up, you know, you could get really into it and start traveling. Cause there's a lot of guys that will travel to these IBJJF tournaments. Like, we got guys going to Kansas City, I think it's next weekend, and you know, the Nashville one. Like, people go all over the country and like go to these tournaments. Like, you could get into that if it's something you really get into. There's people that, but that's the cool part about jiu-jitsu, is there's always age and weight brackets. So like, it's like the master's divisions are every 5 years. So, you know, at once you turn 30, your master's one. So it's 30 to 35. And then master's two is 35 to 40 or 35 to 39. And then 40 to 40 in the master's three, master's four, it just keeps going up. Or I think master's four is the last one. And then it's just like everybody 50 plus, like all kind of does it together. But yeah, it's just like, I think you can do it at any age. I think it's great. You just got to get into it. You got to train smart, you know, pick your training partners wisely. You know, you'll see that there's the, you know, the crazy blue belt that's competing all the time, who's like a, you know, 22 and all jacked up on whatever. Like, maybe he's not the guy that you want to go with every round, or, you know, maybe you don't roll with that guy and you pick the other older guys in the class, or the guys that, you know, aren't going to come at you like a fucking banshee. So it's just being about being smart. You know, there's risks to injury no matter what sport you play or get involved in. So, you know, people always worry about getting hurt in jiu-jitsu, and trust me, it does happen. I mean, the name of the game is, I want to break your bones before you break mine. But like, people get hurt doing anything. So right. I've seen people, I know several guys, like Kyle, for instance. Like, he's, when we had him on, we never got to release that episode. I think we talked about injuries, but like, he's been doing this for like 20 years, and he's never had like some major, he had elbow surgery this past year, but that was like a maintenance, like, he just has, his elbow's been bothering him for the last decade. And he was like, all right, finally, I'm just going to do something about it. And, you know, it's just after time, you know, you do anything. Like, I mean, for fucking, you know, how many years of baseball do you play? You still, like, your wrist still bothers you a little bit. Like, no matter what you do, you're going to, can't go through life like you're made of glass.
Right. I mean, playing hockey just the other night. This is a non-check league, and I made a move, and I cut towards the net, and a guy on the other team was coming at me, and we ran into each other.
Yeah,
and
happens. Accident.
It does. And you know, with jiu-jitsu, you know, the further along you get, I feel like the less likely it is that you're going to get hurt versus rolling with somebody that's brand new, not really knowing what it is that they're doing. I feel like you're more susceptible. That word. English is tough. To getting hurt. But yeah, I mean, it's, I would recommend it. I mean, it's something that you, once you get used to it and you're in shape and for doing it and you're used to getting your ass kicked for a little while, you know, it's something that you can do fairly often.
Yeah. Oh, and you said something there that I've heard this, you know, this excuse before from several people, that they'll say like, man, I've really always wanted to do jiu-jitsu, but man, I just really need to start running, or I just need to get in shape first before I come in there. I'm like, bro, I've seen marathon run guys that are like run marathons show up on their first day and just get, and they're exhausted. It's a completely different, like, there's no level of cardio that you can do where you're going to go in as a brand new white belt, this whole new sport, and just be like, and act like cardio is not going to be a problem, because it's a completely different thing that you're used to doing. And you're not efficient with the move. And the only way your cardio really gets better, in my opinion, is you get efficient with your movements and understand your breathing. Because like, when these all these movements are brand new to you, you're not going to know. You're going to get into positions and you're just not going to know what to do. And then from there, you're just going to start randomly like moving in ways that are not efficient. And then therefore, you're going to get tired faster. You're not going to understand how to control your breathing. Somebody's going to get on top of you and you're going to start hyperventilating because you're freaking out and they're getting closer. They're going to grab the arm. Oh my God, they got the arm. And then people start freaking out. And then like, that's when they get really tired. But when you get used to this and you're calm, you're calm in the chaos. And I think that just comes with time. So yeah, Tony, get out there.
Yep. Do it, Tony.
Do it. Do it. You got another one? Or do you want me
to? It's just a buddy of mine talking about a nickname that I had back in high school.
Okay.
So.
So what did he ask? What was the question? Do you have any nicknames? Because I've got some. Yeah. I've got several different nicknames,
but he wants me to talk about one specific from high school that he gave me. So thanks, Jeff, for this. So yeah, we were walking to baseball tryouts freshman year, and little buddy of mine comes running up. He was our equipment manager, and he's like, "Hey, Pat." I didn't hear him. He's like, "Pat." And I'm like, someone's looking around. Someone say my name. And then finally he goes, "Big fat pussy Pat." I'm like, "What?" And I look over and there's Jeffy standing right there next to me for people that listen that know Jeffy. Fucking Jeffy. But anyway.
Big fat pussy Pat.
Big fat pussy Pat was the nickname that he gave me freshman year. And he still calls me to this day. Still, yeah, buddies from high school. Every once in a while, we'll whip it out. But yeah, I mean, nicknames. Last name Doyle. Yeah. I had my buddies in college, so they took my first initial, last two letters, Pedo. Was my nickname. But I had to shut that one down. Shut that down. funny story about that. So, this past summer, we were down at Missouri State. Coach was retiring, so they had a big retirement party for him and all this, and we were down on the field and everybody's got their kids running around and generations of players. I mean, this guy coached for 40 plus years, so from first team all the way to the most recent guys were there, and my group of guys came back, and they're like, as we're walking on the field and all these kids are running around like Pedo. I'm just like, oh guys
no, I got kids now, you can't do that.
Yeah, there's kids. There's kids running around. The looks that I got when somebody like they were yelling pedo, I'm like, guys, it's not pedo. Yeah. It's not me, but that's pretty close.
Yeah.
Close
for comfort.
We're gonna retire that nickname.
Yeah.
So
let's hang that one up in the rafters.
So yeah, I don't know if they ever will. That's what they've called me that since my freshman year of college. All my college buddies still call me that. But that's one that I wish would be retired.
Yeah.
Cause it makes for some very awkward moments and looks. And then in pro ball, they call it one time there, they came up with Crocodile.
I like that. Yeah. That's good. Crocodile.
Yep. So
yeah, that's cool.
That was one of them. The Latino players would call me Doyle.
I like that. That's cool.
So yeah, those were a few of mine. Patty cakes.
Yep, yeah.
Got that. So
that's a classic.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Yeah, like fat, Zach Attack.
Yeah,
you know,
fat Pat and patty cakes are just kind of classic Pat nicknames.
Yeah.
So
yeah, like Zach Attack. Like I had some people call me that like when I was younger, but like that wasn't like one that really stuck. But I had like three nicknames, I guess I could think of like off the top of my head that are all kind of obscure. The one.
What's a good nickname without being?
Right. Yeah. I mean, so the one was high school. My buddy, they used to call me Doctor. And that came from, remember the first Hangover movie when they're like, paging Dr. Faggot. And yeah, so they were, you know, my last name being Fagas, you know, Fagas. I've gotten lots of that can be obscure. You know, I've been getting shit for that since like third grade. But the doctor just stuck. Like one of my buddies was like hammered when he was like yelling that across the party or something, like paging Dr. Vegas. And like they were just like fucking, I think they were just saying the other word. And so that just like stuck for fucking years. And so like there's still people that call me that. Another one that I have is this one's kind of lame, but a couple of my fraternity buddies would call me Mama. Because I lived in my I lived in a, it was me and three of my buddies from my fraternity. We lived in this, this house that like, it was like the hangout house for especially like my whole class. And I was like the only guy that really seemed to like clean up. And I was the only guy that ever used the kitchen to cook anything. And so they just like started calling me mom. Cause I would, mm-hmm. you know, cause I, you know, I'd get on them about fucking cleaning up after themselves. And so that, that was one that some of them still call me mama. Like my one buddy, Alex, anytime he sees me, it's mama. Ooh.
That was really yeah. good.
Yeah, thanks. But yeah, he still does that anytime I see him. And then the other one I have is this one's from my jiu-jitsu buddies. And really only like two or three guys call me this, but I'm trying to remember how it started. I remember when it started, but I can't exactly remember how. And I'd have to ask Mike, because Mike Dalton was the kind of the one who gave it to me. But it was when we were training. It was in COVID, and we were training in my buddy Nate's basement a lot. And, you know, I was just, I think I've talked about it before, but that was when I saw like a big level up in my jiu-jitsu was when I was training with these guys like through COVID, because I was like the only white belt training with like all these like higher level blue belts and purple belts at the time. And so I just would show up every day and just get my fucking ass kicked for like 4 or 5 months when everything was shut down. And I just remember one day, I think I was having like a good day and I ended up like submitting a couple guys and like, I was like, yeah, I'm coming at you like a fucking hurricane, baby, you know? And then like, you know, I think it was because that, the hurricane, song, here I am, rock you like a hurricane. And I was like, yeah, I'm coming at you like a fucking hurricane, baby. And then like, they just like, I think it was like, everybody laughed and like that name. So like, there's like two hurricane. Or three guys that call me hurricane. That one didn't really stick. I thought that one was kind of cool.
Did Kyle ever give you one? I heard Kyle's the king of
yeah,
nicknames.
Yeah, he's king of nicknames. He's got so many good nicknames. No, he's never really given me one. It's just
what the fuck, Kyle?
Yeah, no, it's just been, I don't think. He's just Zach Tack, you know, like throw like those, but he never like consistently calls me anything. Dude, he's got some great nicknames for people. He's always nicknamed. Because, dude, and that's one super impressive thing about him is like with how many members he has, which has got to be close to like 400-ish. I bet he's in somewhere in the ballpark of 300 to 400. He remembers everybody's fucking
well, shit. I hadn't even like the very first day I was there, I hadn't even ever met him or anything like that. Oh, Pat, what's going on?
Yeah. I'm like, dude, he's got like he's like a savant with names. That's fucking awesome. But and then he gets, you know, like a lot of people have nicknames. Like there's this one dude who kind of looks like Wreck-It Ralph, you know, calls him Ralph or Wreck-It Ralph. And then there's a guy who looks like Peter Parker, so he calls him Spidey. Like there's just like all these funny, you know, people just have funny nicknames. Like what there was this one rest in peace to Connor, passed away last about a year, maybe 2 years ago now, but the white belt at the time, I think he got his blue belt before he passed away, and but he got like really bad cauliflower ear, and you know, he's like probably 6 months into training, like his ear was just ruined. Like it looked like a bone, like we were laughing that it he's calling him Nugget because his ear looked like a chicken nugget, you know. Like they look like he looked like a boneless chicken wing, like hanging off his ear, hanging off the side of his head. So like they just started calling him Nugget. And then he also used to wear like this gi that had like a Hot Wheels logo on it. So he started calling him Hot Wheels first, and then the cauliflower ear happened, and then he started calling him Nugget, which is like just like funny fucking nicknames.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are mine. all right, what's our next one here, bro? This is a good one. Cake donuts or fried donuts? And this is like a 4-part question or 3-part question. I mean, I would say fried donuts for sure, right? I don't know. I love donuts.
I do too.
If I had to like pick like my one.
There's a Dunkin' Donuts in the parking lot of an apartment.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, it's right there. Drive by it multiple times a day. And I'm just like, oh, God. It depends. I do like the cake donuts, the blueberry cake.
Yeah.
Those are good. But just a fried maple glaze.
Yeah, like a chocolate Long John. Yeah. Like that's like my go-to typically, yeah. Like a chocolate Long John or chocolate with sprinkles.
Yeah.
Those are my go-to. And then the next part of the question is your favorite noodles.
Noodles.
So like you just said noodles, stuffed pasta, like in parentheses, ravioli. Or shaped pasta like favelli or penne. So I'm like, I guess I'm thinking like, all right, like, what is my favorite kind of noodle?
Tortellini.
Yeah, I think that would fall into the stuffed pasta. Yeah.
I'd do a tortellini.
Tortellini is your favorite?
Yeah. Like a cheese tortellini.
Yeah, cheese tortellini is really good. Dude, I just love like a good muscacioli though. I would say muscacioli. Yeah, my favorite.
Muscacioli.
Like just to like do that Fit Flavors muscacioli. Oh, so, so good.
Yeah,
dude.
Shout out Fit Flavors.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. So yeah, I'd probably just go with like a penne, a muscacioli, mm-hmm. like just red sauce, meaty.
Yeah,
that's my shit.
That and tortellini.
Yeah. Oh, here's a, well, let's go to another jiu-jitsu question just because we've got so many of those. What is more technically difficult, jiu-jitsu, gi or no gi?
I'd probably say no gi.
I would say gi for sure.
Personally. More technical?
Yes. There's so many more options. Like you've got, you're punished for your mistakes way more in the gi.
Yeah, like, I can see
it's
that.
It's harder to get back. Like yeah, someone gets a grip on something, you're like,
that's true.
Fuck.
Yeah.
You know, like with no-gi, you can rely more on being athletic. You can kind of like, people have less ability to like hold you in place.
Yeah, so I think you'd have to be more technical for that aspect to really submit somebody.
With what, no-gi?
With no-gi, because there is that ability, like it's so much harder. Yeah, you have nothing, maybe
that's,
you,
a, that's a different
you,
way to look at
cause
it.
Because you don't have the ability to grip the gi, so you have to figure out techniques and be more technical in your movements and in your submissions
to get it through
where you can be a little less technical with the gi because you do have something to grab a hold of.
Yeah, no, that's true. And you got so many more options in the gi. Like you're so limited. I mean, you're so much more limited on like just even like your ability to grab somebody when you're in no gi, because that's all I've been training for like the last 2 months. I've probably put a gi on like once or twice in the last 2 months. And so like after this match this weekend, I'm looking forward to getting back in the gi a little bit. You know, I typically prefer no gi over the gi just because you can rely on being a little bit more athletic, it's a much faster paced game. And I always compare it to like soccer and like indoor versus outdoor. Like they're both soccer, but like they're very different.
Right.
You know, and I would say that's the same in jiu-jitsu. Like they're the same, the objective is the same, to take someone down and submit them. But it's a definitely a more difficult road, no-gi, for sure, just because you have so many less options.
So I would think, yeah. I've never done no-gi. I'm just thinking about it in terms of, you know, the ability, like you said, you have the ability to grab things and hold on to things with a gi, or with a no-gi, you don't. Like, you have to have the maneuvers and down and be technically sound. Mm-hmm. To really submit somebody within a no without having, because you don't have that crutch of holding
someone down. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you mean opening my eyes, Pat. Someone said we want Ryan DePriest. So that'll be out. That'll episode already come out by this time. Yeah. So that's not really a question. Thanks, Timmy, for doing what I asked you to do.
We're both really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's a good one, man. That was one of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
Yeah, that was awesome to hear that story. And just, I mean, fuck, just the mental fortitude and mental toughness, just no training, just say, fuck it.
I'm doing it.
Let's go. That's awesome.
And like the motivation behind it to spread his brother's ashes. Like so fucking cool, man.
It's just a really, really cool story. So.
Yeah. All right, here's another one. Here's a show. I want to flip a house. Is it worth it? Is it a sustainable venture? Yeah. Yes. There's a lot of things I've flipped several houses. I've technically flipped like three this year. It can be a very sustainable venture, but it's also something that, you know, you got to realize that it's quick money and you do have to pay taxes on the gains that you, on the profit you make. So, that's something that, you know, when you watch HGTV and they're doing the, like the flip or flop, they don't talk about how much money, and they're just like doing these like, and they don't show how much time it's going to take, and you're going to probably come across problems or something's going to.
They might run across one problem on HGTV
when there's a fucking laundry list usually. Like, there's always problems, but it's awesome. It's a great way to make money. I mean, I'm very particular about the ones that I buy. Like, I wouldn't just, now you talk to guys that are way more seasoned than me, then they might tell you something different, but like you need to be very diligent about running your numbers on things. Like, you need to really do your homework on what things are going to cost, how much, you know, like really be very conservative with your ARV and your after repair value. Because that's something I see a lot.
Get guys in trouble.
I'm running into it right now. You know, we've got And, you know, I've got a listing right now. It's been sitting on the market for 60 days. It was a flip. And, you know, we've reduced the price four times now. And because this guy, you know, what he was anticipating it being worth when it was finished is not aligning with where it's truly at. So you need to, when you are running those numbers and you're looking at the comps, you need to be very, like, be very conservative on your ARV, first of all. Like,
yeah, just because a hard money lender is going to give you an ARV of this, you got to remember, like, they're doing that because they're giving you more money and they're going to make money on the money that they're giving you.
Yes. And so that's where I think this guy, where he's running into issues, and we're seeing the same, because he's been using the same lender for all these, and he's got three flips he's working on right now. And we've been looking at the ARVs of what compare, you know, he's like, well, you take a look at this because they said it's going to be worth this when it's done. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, bro, this is, I don't know where they're, I look at the three comps that they're using for this, and they're, you know, one is, you know, 2.5 miles away. It's in different school districts, you know, right. Like it's a, it was like, these are all 4-bedroom houses, and this is a 2-bedroom.
Well, you've got more experience in this than I do. Hard money side. I mean, is there a prepayment penalties on those?
What do you mean?
Like, so a prepayment penalty, like if you pay it off too soon, do you have to pay interest penalty, like pay extra?
No, because I don't, you paid it off so. Soon. No.
So yeah. So I mean, it would,
well,
make,
they're usually short agreements, like right. 6 to 6 months to a year.
Right.
So,
and so you would think, obviously, if you're doing a 12, like, you know, they want to make as much money as they can on this. So, I mean, is it to their benefit to come in and say, oh yeah, here's your ARV. This is what it's going to be after it sells. And then you go in and get the work done and it doesn't sell. And then it sells right away. Okay. You pay it back, where if they give you a little bit a higher ARV now, even though it may not be that way, the house is going to sit longer. So they're collecting more interest payments.
Yep.
Like, is that some, like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know lending laws on hard money lending. If there are any lending laws on hard money lending, yeah, but
I honestly don't know.
Like, that's like, got to make sure.
I don't have a ton of experience. I mean, I've only used them personally like one time or twice now. And, you know, it was, I mean, I don't know if there are laws against it.
Yeah, I don't either, yeah. But I would think, you know, like, hey, you know, we're going to make more money if this person holds onto that loan longer. So, you know, why not make it a little bit higher and make it tougher for them to sell when the time comes? Like, I mean, obviously you don't want that reputation as a hard money lender. You want, but at the same time, and like, no, I don't know. I would definitely vet the people that you're doing. And just because they gave you an ARV, I mean, that's why I would always recommend an investor, make sure that you have a good appraiser on your side that has nothing to do with this transaction that you can call and like maybe pay a consulting fee to be like, hey, listen, I got this back. Hard money lender's telling me that it's going to be this. This is what I'm planning on doing. Do you see comps in there supporting that?
Yeah.
Because great. I mean, that's what I would, if I were to do flips, that's what I would do.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I would never fully trust an ARV from, just because there's so many variables to it. But at the same time, like, it's, I don't know. I would be very, very cautious, because fucking up on a flip can cost a shit ton of money. I mean, look at the one that I had to step in and help the buyer on with your client, your investor clients. I mean, that's not nothing on them.
Right.
It was previous owners that didn't disclose this. So they've got a case to fight it
for sure.
But right out the gate, I mean,
they're still working on that, to
right.
my knowledge.
Right. Like, and they should be, they should, because that's something that somebody knew. There's no way that nobody, in my mind, there's no way that nobody, any previous owner knew about this.
Right. Well, it was, for the people listening, we're referring to a deal that it was my clients. They were flipping this house. They bought it from a wholesaler, and the seller of that house did not disclose that there was, basically, it was a $30,000, right?
Yeah, $30,000 sewer.
Yeah, $30,000, because they basically redid the sewer in the whole neighborhood, and they were basically charging every house $30,000, and this basically had to be paid off when the house closed. And this wasn't found when my clients bought it, even though it was, I think it had been recorded yet, or no, it hadn't been.
It hadn't been.
Yeah, it hadn't been recorded yet, so it didn't show up when they bought it. But the previous seller definitely knew about it and didn't let them know. And so that when they went to go sell it after they remodeled it, there's all of a sudden a $30,000 lien that had to be paid by the seller at closing. So that means that $30,000 of their profit basically was just going to the fucking municipality.
Right.
Which is like, you know, if you're doing a flip, that's, I mean, that was a huge portion of their profit,
right.
Almost all of their profit from my understanding. And so, I mean, so you gotta be very careful. You can get burned really quick. So, you know, definitely be very cautious with that ARV, talk to an appraiser, talk to a good real estate agent.
Yep.
Make sure you have all of your contractors lined up. You know, if you're, if you plan on doing some of the stuff yourself, great. I wouldn't recommend doing everything yourself unless you have that kind of skill set, which most people don't. So I, you know, talk to some people who have done it. Talk to
trusted
contractors.
Oh yeah, because there are some not so good
shady
ones out
there, man. So yeah, dude, I think it's a great idea. Just you got to just be careful and run your numbers and definitely don't let the budget get out of hand, because that's something I've noticed with the flips I've done is that can happen very, very fast.
Yeah, go back and listen to that episode with Nick Baldwin.
Yeah,
that was
the art of going over budget.
Yeah. And talk about somebody that's been doing it for a very long time and has been very successful with it.
I've done three flips of them this
year. I mean, he's a guru.
Dude,
I mean,
love
God, he's awesome, dude. Shout out to Nick. What he did with the Herman Motel.
Yeah.
Guys, all right. So if you haven't been to Herman, Missouri, it's fucking awesome. I think it's like one of the top rated bachelorette destinations in the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small town, lots of wineries, a lot of distilleries, just a cool place, little German town, but he bought this awesome, or he bought a rundown motel,
yeah,
and he made it fucking awesome.
Yeah, he made it a pimp.
Yeah, I'm excited to get there. I love Herman, and it's not far from St. Louis. It's
an hour and a half,
maybe, and just a nice little weekend getaway, and you can take a train there.
Yeah.
You can hop on the Amtrak and get there, and I mean, I forget how many rooms it was, but he got it and renovated that whole thing. I know it took him a year and a half.
A year. Yeah. He was working on it for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think he was so pumped to be done with it finally.
Oh, I'm sure. But it's it's beautiful. Like he knocked it out of the park. And so, yeah, if you guys are ever looking to go to Herman, check out the Herman Motel, because it's pretty badass.
Yeah, Nick did a great job over
and
there.
It's not far from where everything is. It's pretty close to downtown area of Herman. So
yeah. So this one, I guess, is just for me. What is the most life-changing thing jiu-jitsu has taught you, Zach? Well, it's taught me a ton of things, man. And but I mean, the one thing that I guess it sticks out to me is, like, you don't get good at anything on accident. You don't just show up one day and you're really, really good at anything. And, I mean, obviously, probably realize that if you've been walking around if you've tried anything difficult in your life ever, you probably realize that it makes you realize that getting good at something takes a long time, and it takes a lot of work, a lot of dedication, and you have to stick with it consistently. Just like anything else, just like diet, just like your career, just like anything else, you have to be consistent with it if you want to succeed and be good at it. So that would be the biggest thing that, like, jiu-jitsu really opened my eyes to. It's really the only sport I've ever been, like, halfway decent at. Like, I was a decent wrestler in high school, and I would say this falls into that same kind of category. Similar sport. But it was really the only sport I was ever any good at. But it's also the only sport that I ever, like, really tried to be good at, and, like, cared about it and thought about it constantly, and always, like, looking forward to getting to practice, getting there early, staying late. Like, there's the only sport I ever did that for. And it's definitely paid off in that aspect. So, getting good at, realizing that getting good at something takes a long time and it doesn't happen on accident.
Yeah. I mean, and I didn't do, I did it for a few months. But there's nothing harder than that. No, seriously. I've never done anything harder than that. Like, physically demanding like that, not lifting weights, not doing anything that was harder than that. One, it's just physically demanding. Two, you're getting your ass kicked. And, you know, I loved it. And it just taught me, like, hey, nothing is going to be as hard as this. No matter what I do, nothing is going to be harder than this. And, like, the very first thing I thought, after my first fundamentals, when I got my ass fucking handed to me by some of those purple belts, The quote that popped in my mind, and it's, like I said, it's my favorite quote, and it's from Green Street Hooligans, and it's just like, once you've taken a few punches and realize you're not made of glass, you don't feel alive unless you're pushing yourself as far as you can go. And that is exactly what jiu-jitsu is. And I think it was it was an awesome journey. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's to the point now where it's like, man, I want to give up hockey and get back into jiu-jitsu, like trying to figure out how I can
how to make it work.
Maybe, you know, cut back on the amount of hockey I play so I can still do, like, yeah. I loved it. I had a great time doing it and want to get back into it. I just figuring out with the schedule and with hockey and if I'm really ready to just kind of cut ties.
Yeah.
At least with maybe one of the teams that I play for. And only two. Yeah. So skating at least twice a week. And then, you know, once, and then with coaching too, I mean, I'm sure, you know, I've only got a couple more years of that.
That's over right now, though, right?
No, I've got fall ball right now. Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's going on. That'll be done in October. You know, but that's a couple nights a week and right. things like that. So it's trying to figure out what the everything else that I have going on, which is like trying to get that what I need to give up or what I'm willing to sacrifice to or what I'm not really sacrifice but trade off for jiu-jitsu. But yeah, I mean, there's like I said, do hard shit. Everything else is gonna be easy in this. Jiu-jitsu is like literally one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life.
Couldn't agree. I love everything you said there. I love that Green Street quote.
Yeah.
All right. We got two more and they're both jiu-jitsu related. So biggest game changer in your jiu-jitsu journey. I don't know really. I mean, I did kind of bring it up earlier, but I would say that was my biggest, time where I improved and I got much better was that time during COVID where I was literally only training with people that were so much better than me. And I just saw my training level up significantly when I got in back into the gym with other people my level. And I was like, oh man, I'm doing pretty well here. And so that was a big change. Also just coming to Watson's and learning like a pro and just the way it's taught there. Versus the other place I was at before when I was at Finney's, there was not a curriculum. There was not like a system. Like that's one thing I love about Kyle's is everything has a system and he's constantly changing it too. Like he'll be the first one to say like, you know, this is the way I used to teach this, but now I teach it this way because of this. And like, so he's definitely not married to any ideology or any sort of like, you know, cause you find that that's something with jiu-jitsu, you'll see it. It almost gets religious and like kind of where people will, no, this is the way to do the arm bar. Like, no, there's a lot of different ways.
Right.
So like you'll see that with a lot of like more old school guys. Well, Kyle like really is really good at like being adapting to that, things as they change. So, you know, I would say another thing, I guess when I started coaching too, that would be another like big thing when I was able to, you know, when I had to teach a whole class of people, it made my game level up significantly because like it just ingrain those pathways even deeper, you know, where I always say like, you want to get good at something. You want to like learn the moves so that you don't even have to think about what you're doing. Like, you know how when you tie your shoes, I can like look at you and have a conversation and tie my shoes and not be thinking about what my hands are doing. Like that's what you almost want to do with your jiu-jitsu. You want to be able to like just do it without even thinking.
Yeah. What's the saying? You want to be good at something, practice it. If you want to master it, teach it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. So yeah, those would be the biggest game changers for me. Next one, last one we got. What is a good way to recover after training?
just lying on the mat.
Yeah, lying on the mat.
Catch your breath.
I've gotten into more of the recovery aspect of things. Actually, we listened to a really good podcast recently on. It was all in recovery. It was a Chris Williamson Modern Wisdom episode with Mike Isertel. It was the third one that they've done together, and it was all. This one was. Like he's done, I think he did one on muscle building, one on like performance, and then like one on, and then they did this one on recovery. And this one was on recovery, was like really good. And it's something I don't do enough of is like focus on my recovery. Like I'm just so go, 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 go all the time. And like my body tends to get beat up because of that. I do the occasional cold plunge. I sauna pretty regularly. But really, I think just like taking days off. Like it's okay to take days off. You're not going to get that much worse. You're not going to lose all your progress if you take a day or two off. So, but like, don't take too much time off. Take days off to recover. Don't take days off to be lazy. And know the difference, but always do something, you know, constantly staying active with other things. I think your nutrition, pay a big piece of that. And like relaxing at the end of the night, that's my favorite way, is just, you know, getting home after a hard night of training, putting the boys to bed, you know, making a ton of food, smoking a bowl and chilling and watching TV. Like, that's like my favorite thing in the world. So, I mean, that's how I recover. So,
yeah, I mean, for me was, and it always will be, did it with baseball, I didn't do it with working out, but, stretching.
Yeah.
Stretching was always key, especially like the next day, getting a light stretch in afterwards, but then like the next day stretch and foam roll. But I have a love hate relationship with a foam roller.
Yeah.
Fucking sucks, but
brutal.
Yeah. Afterwards feels amazing. But yes, a lot of stretching. With baseball, I mean, that was the thing, is stretch constantly. You know, my flexibility was incredible when I was playing baseball. And I was always taught, like, the stronger you are, more flexible. Like, yeah. strength equals flexibility. And so I've always carried that with me. So, you know, doing a lot of stretching always helped me. And then, like you said, I mean, cold plunges or you know, get in a hot tub, something like that, that helps relax the muscles. I mean, honestly, I was never really, like, after I pitched, I was never really a guy that iced. I'd rather just do heat. I didn't like how my muscles would tighten up on me like mm-hmm. that. I just wasn't a fan of that. Some people love icing. I wasn't a thing for me. But ultimately, I think it does come down to your nutrition. You know, shout out to First Form. I know that they've got a product out there that I always throw in my post workouts, the Ignition.
Yeah.
That helps with recovery.
Yep. Replenish that glycogen.
Yep. Yep. Get that. Just like, yeah, make sure you're eating properly and doing the things, like, don't go out and get fucking drunk.
Yeah, that's gonna,
you know, that's not gonna help, you know, or go and like shit, you know, learn things that are gonna help. So that's, for me, that's what I always stretch and made sure I was doing that stuff to get the muscles out, broken bones, ligaments and shit like that. It's a whole different story, but
right.
You've got more expertise in that than I do.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, you know, that was all our questions. So, appreciate everybody submitting the questions that did. And, we love these are like some of our favorite episodes to do. So
yes,
appreciate everybody that filled out a question and look forward to the next one. We do about one of these a month. So, when I ask us something, be on the lookout for the next time we post a question box on Instagram. If you guys enjoyed the show, make sure you hit that like button for us. Tell someone you know about the show and what you thought, and just share it with them. And yeah, and if you haven't clicked that subscribe button yet, please do that for us, and we will see you next time.